Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
And welcome to the program this evening. Welcome to my home. And we are doing something brand new tonight. We're not only going to be live on the radio, but we're going to be live right here from my home, video-wise, and live all around the world. We're going to be on all kinds of Facebooks, YouTube networks, BBS website, and I think there's dozens of other networks that we are on live right now. And we've kind of done that because I think the world is becoming more savvy with the online presence. So we want to make sure we're on the cutting edge of all of that fun and excitement. And we really want to get the message out of the most wonderful guests that we have that I truly believe in the fields that we talk about, to be able to share them with the world. And this is literally going around the world tonight. So welcome to Houston. I actually work right over yonder at Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital. And I do want to let you know that this is the best medical center in the entire world. And it is an honor to be a part of what is going on with the COVID research. I really think the Baylor College of Medicine will be the one that comes up with the vaccine for this virus. And it's just an honor to be part of what's going on with Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital. They are wonderful, wonderful people. And I am blessed to be able to say I work there. So we're going to be here the next hour. What I always like to do is make sure that if you invest an hour of time with me on a Sunday night live, I promise you that I'm going to give you something that you can use within the week for you, and you'll be able to take away from you something of value that you can apply to your own personal life, or you can apply to somebody that's in your friendship or your family circles, that you can actually say, hey, I heard this Sunday night, and I think this works. And I personally believe that if you come on and just be part of this, you're going to get something of value. And I know for a fact that tonight is going to be one of those definitely shows that you're going to want to pass on to other people. And I want you to get an ink, pen, and paper. I also want you to write down this number, 888-627-6008. Because our guest tonight has agreed to be able to take phone calls tonight. We have Doug, the best radio producer in the world, that's going to answer the phone. It's worth calling that 888 number just to watch Doug. So get on there and say, hey, Doug, how are you? He will ask you your first name and maybe what city you're from. That way we can at least know who in the world's listening to us. And then he'll patch you right in. And on the little chat room, I'm going to open up the chat room on my side here so I can see it, he will let me know right here on the screen that we have somebody online that wants to talk to us. There's a couple things I always like to start off with. First of all, next weekend is going to be Freedom Weekend, 4th of July coming around. We're going to have a special guest on next week. I think it's going to be Brandon Dempsey and possibly Micah is going to be with us too. From Austin, Texas, and they're going to be talking about freedom and personal freedom that's going on in their own lives. I know for sure I'm going to try to get Brandon on for that next week, and just a dear friend of mine, so I know you recognize him from guests in the past, but he'll be with us next week on Freedom Weekend for our country. If things happen to you in life, how do you get happiness? how do you receive any kind of joy in what's going on in the world today? With what's happening on our streets, with what's happening, I don't have, with our mask. I have my mask around here. You literally carry a mask around with you now. How do you find happiness in that? And I just want to give you two or three, four or five, depends on how windy I get, on how to find happiness right now where you are. And the first thing I really want you to do, try this tomorrow morning, is before you ever get out of bed, or you ever get out of, I sleep in that chair right there, or if you ever get out of the chair, before you ever move, take an inventory and appreciate exactly what you have. If we would count our blessings more than we count our money, you would be a lot happier and more joyful of a person. I promise you that. Appreciate what you have. Happiness is there. It's wrapped up in beauty, and sometimes it's hidden. But I want to let you know, no matter what's going on in this world, no matter what you see on the news stations and CNN and Fox and all of that, we still have things to be happy about and appreciative about. And we are a blessed people. And I know each person that's watching me tonight or listening to my voice, you have something to praise the Lord about and to be happy about, that you are blessed. So before you ever start moving in the day, wouldn't it just be awesome to be able to go, I thank you that I woke up. I'm happy that I'm able to get up and move and put on some clothes and go to work, or open up my computer and dial into work and work from home, or be in a place where I know I'm going to have breakfast. And there's just so many things that we ought to be joyful for and happy for. And then also the second thing is tomorrow morning is I want you to really focus on the things that truly matter, in life. It's amazing that a few weeks ago, when this COVID thing hit, it seemed like the only thing that mattered in life was one thing. Do you remember what it was? Toilet paper. Really? That's the only thing that matters in life that I'm appreciative of? I don't think so. There's more to life than just toilet paper. So what we all have done is hoarded up the toilet paper, and now that we're closing Texas possibly again, there's probably going to be a shortage on it. But there's more to life. And we ought to focus on those things that truly matter more to us than just physical possessions. Something that you're going to use and throw away. Something you're going to blow your nose on or throw away. There's more things that matter in life. And I just want you to be able to appreciate them a little bit more and focus on them more than you ever have. I know parents are going absolutely stir crazy right now. The kids are climbing the walls, climbing their legs, hanging from the chandeliers and trying to figure out something to do. But somewhere in the middle of tomorrow, I want you to look at them and appreciate what you have. Appreciate what you have because you are blessed. When you get old like me and you look at your kids and they're 30 years old and you go, wow, I wish I didn't spend so much time at the office. We talked about this last week when my son was on as a guest. I don't believe I've ever heard on a dying bed a man say these words, I wish I spent more time at the office. It's always going to be, I wish I gave more time to my family and to the people that cared. I think we're going to stop with those two. I think we have such a good guest tonight that we're going to be able to fill this hour really easily. And it is a pleasure of mine to work with probably the most wonderful people that can be worked with. At Baylor College of Medicine and Texas Children's Hospital. And I have a friend that works for what they call the TCPSO, and that's one of the veins and the lines and the subcommittee groups that's in with Texas Children's. And her name is Kelly Rooney. And Kelly Rooney is a dear friend of mine. And we have known each other for years since I started in the credentialing world and worked together via phone and via internet. But she started to share with me a few years ago blogs and things that kind of encouraged me to get on her writing site and read some of the things she was posting. And they meant something to me. And I want to let you know, and we're going to talk about this shortly, but I just, and we'll get this where you can see it. I just downloaded this book and read it this afternoon. In Turbulent Times by Kelly Rooney. And it's on Kindle. It's on Amazon right now. So before you get off this program, we take our first commercial break. I would love everybody to get on Amazon and download this and read it. Sometime in the next few, it's a 10-day journey. And I love about the 10 days, although I cheated, Kelly, I read it all at one time. But Kelly is from Deer Park, Texas, which is considered a small town with just a big heart. She's a mom of two teenagers who enjoy their independence, and we may end up finding a little bit more about that. And the time that she once devoted to her children is now filled with writing, and she is good at it, and living a life of new experiences. Now, why would Kelly be on this show? Listen to this. Life for Kelly includes, and has included, and still does, a lot of ups and downs. These life events in her life are the fuel behind each of the posts that she writes. So this is telling me she don't just write to write. She writes from inside of herself. That makes all the difference in the world. You can just write to fill the paper, to put ink on parchment. That's junk. But when you write from your heart and your soul and you let it, the world read it, it makes all the difference in the world. And this is what we're going to talk about, part of what we're going to talk about this evening. She was married to an alcoholic and learned how to support her spouse who suffered from that disease and addiction. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk about that tonight. And Kelly, I just want you to know that it is an honor to have you with me tonight on Breaking the Silence, and I consider you, dear friend. Thank you for being here tonight, and let the world see your face right now. So Doug, bring her in. Kelly, welcome to the program.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. And I have to say, I appreciate all the support that you've given me from my first book, and then my new book's coming out next month. It's going to have three different books with it. So it's going to be a three-book release. But you've always supported me. And I always want to support you. And when I went in and bought the book today and read it, I was absolutely thrilled. I did do a review for you on Amazon. I gave you the highest marks, and I wrote some good things for you. And it takes a while for that to come up. But hopefully in the next few hours, Amazon will have that posted for you. And I just am thrilled with this 10-day journey. First of all, why did you call it In Turbulent Times? And where did you get this picture? Absolutely beautiful cover. How did that come about? Tell me about the title and the picture on the cover.
So the title In Turbulent Times, I have this idea of doing guided journals just because for me, writing definitely is my outlet. It's a therapeutic process. It has turned into a way for me to hopefully reach others through the blog. But, this first journal was just kind of taking different life events and different things that I have experienced, which are not always the, what we call rainbows and unicorns of our life. They're more of the harder times. So you think about the airplane, you have turbulence, and just when you go through that and you're bouncing around, it just reminded me of that in particular. And then, of course, day one of the journal entry is my analogy of airplane wisdom, which ties back to the title of In Turbulent Times.
Yeah. So after reading it, and we're going to get into more specific about your experiences in life and what mm-hmm. you've dealt with. After reading it, there was a couple places that I really was impressed with that just got me excited was, and I don't want to let the cat out of the bag because I want people to buy the book themselves, but the day six of accepting yourself.
Yes.
And being, because that one went inside my heart and kind of jiggled it for a while, because there's two things in my life that I hate to do by myself. That's go to the movies and eat out. I hate those things by myself. With somebody else, I love it. Those are my two favorite things to do unless I'm alone. Tell me what you tried to accomplish in that day, and tell me about accepting yourself, and how does that gel together with this alone scenario of going to Barnes & Noble, and I do this at least once or twice a week alone, and just sit and read and look, and just tell me what you were thinking when you got to day six, because I thought this was wonderful.
So, you know, I think it ties back to thinking too much of what other people think. And that's when, you know, I'm walking into establishment alone, in my opinion, or how my issue and my challenges, others are going to look at me and say, she's a loner. She doesn't have a friend. Oh my gosh, you know, just why is she here alone? And I think that's just how I was interpreting it for myself and definitely putting that out to what I thought others were thinking about me. And I had to come to terms that that's not the truth. Everybody's on they have their own agenda. They're doing their own thing. And I have to stop worrying about others. And in part of not worrying about others meant I had to sit with myself. And then with sitting with myself, the biggest part is facing that alone time and in a public scenario. So I think there's two parts to being alone. You know, being alone at home, you can definitely be lonely. You can feel a little lost. I know that happens for me. Sometimes there's some great moments out of that too at home where I just get some great me time. But in the public scenario, it really, it just exaggerates that feeling of, oh my gosh, I'm going to this place alone. I'm not with somebody. I can't turn to somebody to smile or laugh with. And that's a big deal for me because I do enjoy companionship. I do enjoy having a friend and I find a lot of value in that. But to the place that I saw that I have a codependency, it really was brought to light that part of it, the codependency part of it. So I had to challenge myself to say, okay, let's just go through the action of being alone in a public scenario, face this fear head on, and let's see what happens.
Okay, let me drill down a little bit. That codependency part of you. Let's take another layer off that onion. What have you found in your life with where you are right now? And we're going to take a step back here just shortly, right after the first break. Mm-hmm. That you were codependent on, and now that you are more alone, how did you make the adjustment? And what's your recommendation to people that, like I am, I live alone here. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, Kelly, I don't know about you, but there's days I am sick and tired of myself. It's like, you know, I'm really tired of being by myself because I'm talking to myself. I talk to Eeyore a lot. Eeyore's over there on the end table. Me and Eeyore have a discussion every now and then. But how's that codependency deal with you on maybe days that aren't so bright? How do you deal with that?
So I have to just go through the motions. I have to sit with everything that comes for me. I have to sit how everything comes in, whether it's feeling sad or it's feeling just angry that this is my situation, or, you know, just I have to really go through that emotion to understand it. So I can't bottle it up. I can't ignore it and say, oh, it's okay, because the minute I do that, I'm only going to make it get bigger and worse the next time I'm sitting alone. So I have to let that emotion come in, because when it's a time that I'm not wanting to be alone, you just have to face the facts. And that's just something, that's the reality of it. But then, just as you spoke of in the positive moments or your positive points at the beginning of the meeting here, you know, the opportunity to sit with yourself and see your blessings is probably how to transition out of those feelings and really being in the present moment. And that's probably my biggest lesson. One, being in the present moment, and then two, feeling grateful for what I have. And it could be the smallest three things. It could be a day that I got all my to-dos done on my work list, and here I am. I'm able to celebrate an evening without children, without anybody here. And instead of feeling down because I don't have somebody to chit-chat with or to visit with, I can just really look at, I had a really great work day, and I can celebrate with a glass of wine, a great TV show, or just whatever I want. Then all of a sudden it turns into an evening of opportunity with myself.
Wow, that's good. That's good. We're going to take our first break. And on the other side of this, I'll just kind of warn you a little bit. I want you to tell me what you're hoping the book does, this Kindle edition In Turbulent Times, does for people. And then I want to talk really personal with your relationship with your husband, your ex-husband, and alcoholism. I know there's a lot of people that's listening right now because they have been told that this is going to be our subject tonight. that are on the edge of their seat going, how do I get through this if I'm in it right now? And you've been there, you've done that, and you're still smiling. And I want you to be able to give that same smile to all these other people. So on the other side of the break, we will be talking to Kelly Rooney about her past with dealing with alcoholism with her ex-husband, and then this new book that I want everybody to download while we're on our break, In Turbulent Times. Get it on Amazon right now. We'll be right back in about a minute and 38 seconds on the other side of this commercial. Be right back.
HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back, and we appreciate Doug, you running that. It sounded like I was underwater during part of that commercial, but that's okay. I can't wait. This the new book is going to be coming out shortly, Overcoming the Darkness, and I've delayed it because I keep rewriting it and keep changing it and trying to readapt it to what some of the times are now, but there's no rush on this. I prefer it to be quality than I would be just to rush into it. We have with us tonight Kelly Rooney, and she's from here in the Houston area and a dear friend, and she's discussing her book. And isn't it neat to Kelly to go from somebody that just liked to write to somebody that maybe wrote a poem every now and then to somebody that actually got a blog to now you are a published author. And you're on Amazon, and I'm excited. I'm going to start watching the numbers go up. And I know you're just going to do great with that. But tell me about the book a little bit, what your goals are, why you wrote it, and then we're going to talk about your experiences. So what are you hoping that this book does for people?
So I am a junkie when I go to the Barnes & Noble store, and I like to look at, you know, the different journals they have and just the different parts of that store that just has fun stuff that you can purchase, but they're blank journals. And of course, that's a great thing to still get out there and write down. But how many times have you opened up your journal and even with the fact of having a bad day, just to start writing down it, sometimes where do you start? What do you do? It could be overwhelming with just a blank page. So the intention of this book was to help that person that may be looking at those beautiful journals at a bookstore and purchasing it, but yet they sit on their nightstand, blank, not used, not filled out, or it's just a low priority and it's not something they make a priority. So this book is short and sweet, but it is a 10-day so that you can really do one journal entry at a time and sit with the passage and sit with the questions at the end, and hoping that it triggers for yourself something that you want to improve upon or something that you want to celebrate because it reminds you of a win and it's worth remembering that and having that written down. So that's the goal of the book, is to help somebody who may have that blank journal sitting on their nightstand.
How important has journaling been in your personal life?
It's huge.
Me too.
It's huge. I can write down my skeletons in my closet, which you know, that's the first thing that makes somebody clam up and not share even sometimes with their closest friends. I can write out every ugly word and get rid of it without saying it to somebody to where that could harm a friendship or harm something. So you just, but you have to release it. So that's a big thing, is the release. And then sometimes it's just nice to write and say, God, today was such a really great day. And I am so happy and I am so thankful. And I want to go back and read that entry because I know that's not going to be an everyday scenario.
Oh, that's good. That's so good. And I preach this everywhere I go, with every workshop I talk to around the nation before COVID hit. That I would always say, when people say, Greg, how did you get through your abuse and all the stuff in your past? I'd say one thing, journaling. Journaling is one of those things that got me through. I mean, my love for Jesus Christ and his protection was obviously the one thing, but journaling was the one thing that I could do that actually allowed exactly what you said, to release it from me onto paper, and then eventually let a friend read it, and a page, and then watch the reaction. And then if it wasn't condemnation, I actually released some of it to my kids, and then actually then released it to the world. This is basically my journal, just rewritten to the world to let people know what happened to me. And it impacted so many people, and still, that's why it just, I don't have to carry it around. I can put it on a page and then close it. Now, I haven't talked to you personally about this in detail, but if I was to go back, and I'm just going to pick a time, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and pull your journal out and open it up, Kelly, what would some of those entries be in what you were experiencing at the time with what your turbulent times were in those days that we're going to be talking about now with alcoholism? What would some of those pages look like to you, Kelly?
So that was my skeleton in the closet. Even very hard for me to share with my friends. You know, you talk about Facebook that shows all of your highlights. I kind of did some of that in person with friends and would swipe under the rug those situations that I was frustrated with at home. And for me, the story is, you know, my ex-husband, the alcoholism didn't really set in the marriage until probably about 14 years in. We were married for 17, but about 14 years in, the habit began to form. And he is former military, and it did initiate with PTSD, but at the same time, a bad day would require a drink, and then a habit turns into a habit, and then disease is also in, you know, both sides of our family, but very much in his as well. So it's just, when the disease hits, it's strong and it's a sickness, and then to overcome it's even harder. So for me, the situation would occur at home, and I was dealing with the children by myself, or I was, you know, trying to quickly shuffle them off to bed so that it was just minimal impact to the home, to the household. And then if we were outside with friends or visiting with friends, it was also make sure, you know, is he maintaining, or are we getting to the place of no return, and that constant on guard, because there would just be a moment of really great, everything's good, to, oh crap, we need to get home quickly, or oh crap, I need to get into bed quickly. And it would just, that turn would happen so fast. So that was my skeleton, and I would just want to kind of hide it. And that skeleton brought in sadness, that skeleton brought in withdrawing. It was very difficult to just function, but I had to, because I was a mother and I was also a full-time employee and I was also a friend. And it, you know, it just became so bad that I had to figure out how to fix it. So the first thing I did was I looked online, because I thought, it's safe, I'm alone, I'm at home. This is the first step I can do. And I personally wanted our marriage to work. I was like, there's a way to beat this. There's got to be a way for us to work through this. And so I was searching for those stories. I was searching for spouses and whatever it may be to support a spouse through addiction. And there wasn't anything out there.
Really?
That's what kicked out the blog, or how it kicked off the blog for me, and why I started in the beginning. And my very early writings in the blog are very much focused on the alcoholism. And that part of that world for me, of how we would move through our day to day. You know, that was a very big challenge. So it was filled with a lot of sadness and hiding. That would be my journal.
So what in, you said 14 years in, you started noticing maybe the dependency or the codependency or the disease, however you want to look at it. Mm-hmm. When did it become, and how did it become, like, I'm fearful. This is not just on every other weekend instance. This is becoming on every day, possibly. I don't know your story, but when did it become inside to where you go, uh-oh, I have a problem, and how did you deal with that?
That was the 14-year mark. I do believe we were working through some of those signs prior to, maybe a couple years prior to that, and I was very much in denial about it. I probably would have friends that were, you know, there and listening to me, and I would struggle, and I would share my story and say, oh, we're going to try this, or we're going to try that, and he's going to cut back this way. But I do think I was in denial about the disease. At the 14-year mark, it was a little bit heavier, and it was a little bit more severe. And in terms for my story, I know that there's all different kinds of situations that come with alcoholism, but for me, he would just be very absent and not be able to function. And so going to dinner, you couldn't have him go to dinner, and I would use the term healthy. So I started to notice at that time that if we were at dinner and he ordered more than a couple of drinks, I'm like, well, this isn't going to result in this hour is going to quickly change for us. That's just too much. So then he and I would have a discussion about, okay, let's create some boundaries. What's a healthy way to go out to eat? And so then I had the healthy boundary of, if you are not okay, you don't get to go out to eat with us. It's just me and the kids. And unfortunately, as he was facing this disease, and he is working on it still today, but as he was facing and trying to work on it, there were many times that he could not go out to dinner with us. He could not attend the school functions, because unfortunately that was the choice that would happen. And so that, I mean, that just 14 years through the 14 to 17. So the last 3 years were the hardest.
And I want to look in your eyes here. How did it make you feel as a woman and as a wife and mother to watch the hill progressively get steeper, and you could tell that the downward speed was becoming overwhelming, that I don't know if I can stop this from happening. Tell me about how you dealt with that, because there had to be days and nights in journaling entries on, oh my gosh, it's out of my control. How did you deal with that?
Okay, I'm glad you said that, and you actually hit on one of the key words. So through therapy and Al-Anon and the different resources that I implemented in my life, there's two parts to the disease. You have the person that's addicted, and then you have the person that's a part of the situation. And that was me choosing as a spouse to support. Now, I do not want to be an enabler, but at the same time, I can never stop his fall. I can never stop the downward, the spiral that's occurring. And so I learned about the three C's, and that I did not cause it, I cannot control it, and I cannot cure it.
Okay, so these are what you do. Is this what you call them, or is this what somebody else calls them?
It's a part of Al-Anon.
It's part of Al-Anon. So give me those three C's again, because I'm going to write those down and maybe put them someplace. So you did not. What's the first C?
I did not cause it.
Okay, so it's not your fault, and in that you don't feel any regret or remorse that this is what happened. It was all his choices.
Correct.
Okay. And what's the second one?
I cannot control it.
You know, I've read, and this is what I love about this show, is that when I know when people's coming on, I always try to not only read everything that they've ever written, but I try to read something that somebody else wrote about the issue. And I read Gentle on My Mind. Glenn Campbell's wife, Kim, wrote a book about his life of alcoholism, and then eventually he got some kind of Parkinson's disease or something that started making him shake, and ended up taking his life. But one quote she has in there is, one thought that she had is, she thought he could control it. And when he couldn't control it, it was so painful for her to sit back and watch him not being able to control it anymore. Talking about Glenn Campbell. How did you react when you sat back and you go, wait, this is a blaze that can't be put out now?
So as a spouse, you want to hit that magic button that turns it off. And you don't want to see somebody hurt. You don't want to see somebody struggle with the decisions of a child's band performance over a drink. I mean, it's a really, really sad moment to see, but it's a real moment and somebody does go through that. And I had to remove myself from the place of wanting an outcome such as a sober husband attending a band concert to the place of, I have a husband that is really struggling with addiction and we have to start looking at the resources. And the only thing I can do is encourage, and he has to own it all the way through. Mm. So it's a painful place as it's, I call it big love because it was a love that hurt to experience, but it was a love that I couldn't do anything for him. I could only encourage and say, are you going to AA? Are you going to therapy? Do you have your sponsor? And those would be the things that I would continue to encourage. And at the same time, there were things that I needed to work on because as the spouse, the flip side is I become very angry in those moments. I'm not quick to be patient. It takes a little bit longer to be patient, and I'm very quick to accuse. And that would probably kick off some feelings for the for him with the addiction and with alcoholism. So, you know, there's a dynamic in the relationship that's this push pull, and it really is something you can't appreciate till you go through it, and you can't really figure out what works for you until you start putting a few things into place. So the biggest thing, you know, with the three C's, that not controlling it and not curing it, knowing those two things made me give him big love so that he could take this journey and walk it how he needs to. And then I can remove myself, continue to live life and walk my journey in the best way possible.
So the third C is curing it?
Yes, that you cannot cure it.
Okay. So you didn't cause it, you can't control it, and you can't cure it. Mm-hmm. This is his responsibility.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. When it became, and I'm doing this tongue in cheek, when it became front page news on the Houston Chronicle that this was happening in your life, when your friends all knew, it didn't make the paper, but the news was out. The skeleton has broken through that closet door that we all have something back there. We don't want anybody to know what happens in our home. What kind of reception did you get, good, bad, and ugly, with your family, his family, with friends, employees that you work with, coworkers? Well, what kind of feedback did you get from those areas of your life?
So I started off with my core group of friends that I shared it with, and that reception was very supportive, and I received many times, no judgment. If you want to stay, no judgment. But I have to share that, you know, there is a course of 3 years that I was identifying this rock bottom that we're hitting, and I had to find support. So I did find it at the beginning of the 3 year mark of that. But towards the end of the 3 years, I know I had friends that were probably tired of me fighting the battle, and you could, and no judgment or no negative feedback on them, but I know that I would be just as tired if I saw a friend running in a hamster wheel that was nothing but sadness. You just want them to get off that hamster wheel. And I know my friends were telling me, you know, there are times you just have to take care of you, Kelly. You just have to take care of you. And I do believe there were moments that I put more into trying to control and cure it than really letting go and letting him walk that journey and continue on my path. It was a long, hard journey, but my friends were very good, very patient. But I am certain there were times that they were tired of me hearing the same story that I'm sharing. yeah. over and over, because it wasn't a different story. It was always the same scenario. And I was always frustrated, sad, and angry at the end of every scenario. And I do believe that weighs heavy on a friend or family member. I am thankful that each person that I reached out to was there for me, but I do want to share that that's why we need therapy, because our friends are not meant to carry those burdens for us. So we do need, you know, therapy is super important, because we need to have a professional outlet, one, and then an outlet that kind of pulls the burden off the friends so that you can still have those fun moments with your friends and it's not 100% of the conversation.
Fantastic. Okay. That's a great point to take our next break and our last break. We'll be back just on the other side of this. And Kelly, I'm going to ask you about some of that therapy, if you're in therapy, without going into great detail, what you find that works and doesn't work. And then I really want, if there's anybody that wants to call in at 888-627-6008, if you're experiencing this, I know there's people listening right now. I have emails and texts that are coming across already that I can tell they are. If you want to call in and talk to Kelly, feel free to do that at 888-627-6008. And we'll be back right after this last commercial break for the final segment of Breaking the Silence. Be right back.
This couldn't be coming at a better time. Have you ever felt like you were just trapped and couldn't find your way out of darkness? Have you ever felt like you were drowning and fighting to find your next breath? Well, coming in June 2020 will be the second of a three-part trilogy, my new book, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. This new book will provide you a step-by-step approach of how to reach that destination, that important destination called hope. Now, two additional resources are going to be made available when this book is released. One, The Map to Hope. It'll be a handy guide that you can carry around with you, put in your briefcase or put in your purse. And this guide is going to help you find your way when you're stuck in life looking and searching for hope. And then the other resource, the Overcoming the Darkness Companion Journal. I have always believed that journaling is the first step to finding real healing and hope in your life. And this journal will guide you down that path. I'm excited about these resources and this new book that's going to be released in June 2020, the Summer of Hope. Now back to the next segment of Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams right here on BBS Radio.
All righty. Welcome back for the last segment. We have Kelly Rooney that is just speaking from her heart and her spirit tonight about her life and the good things and the bad. And she has written an awesome book that I want to make sure in turbulent times, go right now and download that on Amazon. I think it's, what, $3.99? It's one of the cheapest books you can buy right now. Mine's $12.95. Hers is $3.99. Get this on Kindle. You can download it. You can put it right on your phone. You can put it right on your iPad. And I read it today. And then you can just, if you have never journaled, I recommend that because it kind of gives you pointers of, hey, what do you think about this? What do you think about that? And I suggest everybody, if you don't journal, to do it. But it's just an awesome read. And I appreciate it. And it really stirred up a couple things in me just reading. And I appreciate that, Kelly. So thank you. And hopefully this will be great. Do you have any plans to do more later on? And what would those be? You already got something in the works?
So this particular book does not touch on the alcoholism. It's literally just to kick off journaling. I do have a book that I am working on, same style, guided journaling, but it's going to focus on the alcoholism. And I plan to have that out before the holidays. So that way, when it's the toughest time, and I have to say that was probably when I experienced more of my harder moments were the holiday times. I want to offer that support because I feel like the book was, it's also a guided journal, but I'm also hoping it lets others feel like they're supported and not alone in their circumstances.
Okay. You're This is so good because this is what we, when something happens to you, you're not just taking it and overcoming it and still smiling tonight. You're using it to help other people. And that's what all these experiences are all about. And I was getting ready to ask you, and you segued right into that. The toughest times were the holidays, were birthdays, were special events, because of the alcoholism when he wasn't able to engage properly, or what was the situation without getting too specific?
Yes. So I believe for my ex-husband, the holidays were sadder times for him for his personal reasons. And so what does alcohol do? It numbs that pain. So when he's going through a difficult moment and he's looking to numb that pain, it would definitely happen during the holiday time. Picking up the load would be hard. And of course, you're seeing your loved one in pain and hurting and numbing it. And then you're angry because they're not able to participate. And you want that partnership with, you know, Christmas morning, things like that. And, you know, he did everything to the best of his ability, but he, you know, he was working on it. He still has to work through it. But the holidays were for us exceptionally hard. And I would carry the load to make sure that our children didn't feel as big of an impact. They know their dad wasn't feeling well. They knew their dad was sick. And they love them, or love him to this day. And regardless of circumstances, you know, there is a level of understanding they have to come to terms with and how to be there for him today. And that, you know, the holidays are hard because you want to have fun. You want to celebrate every minute of it. And when you can't, it's really, really hard.
So without getting, again, I would never violate your personal experiences in space, but did the kids handle it okay? Or did they understand? And I know we always say this, kids are resilient, but I was one of those kids that had an alcoholic dad, and obviously it turned really bad for me, but I wasn't as resilient as everybody thought I was. I just pretended to be. So without getting too personal, did the kids handle this okay? And did what did you do to be able to help them understand?
So during the 3-year period where the spiraling began and became a little bit worse, you know, everything was not so great on a more regular basis. They were very aware of the situation, but I made sure that they knew if they needed to ask permission or if there was something going on in their world, with school, with anything, they just knew to come to me. They didn't have to bounce back and forth between mom and dad or figure out how, if dad's okay today or not okay. They didn't have to determine that at all. I managed that 100%. So my goal was that they just, if they wanted to hang out with their dad and they knew their dad was in a great place, enjoy that day. And if dad wasn't in a great place and he's just going to not be available, then he's just not going to be available. And that's where I would step in and try to pick up that load. And so that's the dynamic that we created over that time frame. I will tell you, my knee-jerk reaction one holiday was I did cancel Christmas, and it did impact my kids. And in canceling Christmas, it meant I didn't want anybody at the house for two reasons. It was one, it was just, I was tired. It was hard to carry the load. It was just hard to keep going. And then two, I was nervous about, well, how would the day unfold with family here, friends? My knee-jerk reaction was like, avoid everything. Let's just avoid it and run. And sometimes that is a go-to that's not good, but it does come out of me. And that was my reaction one Christmas. And it really upset my children because we didn't have family here. And it upset the family that couldn't come. And so it ended up hurting a lot more than just facing together as a family situation. So I would recommend to anybody out there, don't do a knee-jerk reaction, don't cancel, and talk about it out loud with anybody that will be at your home that could be involved, or not involved, but in an environment that could potentially be somebody that's new, not feeling so great or not doing so great and may not end the night so well. You know, just build that support system ahead of time so that you can all still find a way to enjoy the holidays. But the holidays were exceptionally hard, and to the place that I canceled one Christmas, and that was one of my poor moments in the process as a parent and as a spouse of an alcoholic.
Yeah. Now, we got just a few minutes left. If there's somebody listening to your voice, either via radio or watching your face and hearing your words, and they're in this situation. Give me a couple, two or three, it didn't have to be two or three, but just give me some good advice that you would give them of say, hey, wait, you need to do this. Don't forget to do this. Make sure you do this. Just you're talking to a friend across the table, drinking a cup of coffee, and say, Kelly, my spouse is an alcoholic. I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm at my end of my rope. What would you say to them?
The first thing I would say to them is that you're going to watch your spouse drive their car off a cliff, and you won't be able to do a single thing about it. Come to terms with that, and then you'll be able to face the other parts of your life that include you living it without the worry and without concern about what others think. But you have to come to terms that that person in your life could potentially, and I believe it does happen more times. It happened for me. You know, the rock bottom occurs for somebody, and you cannot buffer their rock bottom. You must let them hit rock bottom, because these are their life. That's their own life lesson. And part of that is letting go. You just have to let go. And that's part of the big love.
Okay. Anything else?
Yes. So another piece is having faith. I practice the serenity prayer. It just is like a mantra. It's just something to say. And, you know, you learn to let go of the things you can't control and have the wisdom to, you know, to hang on to the things you can. And part of that for me was living my life. I have control over my life, over the fun things I get to do, the things, the choices. And I just had to start identifying what made me happy and not stop doing those things, not hold back from a dinner with the girls because my husband may not be able to be available to help the kids, but my 17-year-old son very well could take care of, you know, dinner, and I could still go to dinner with the girls. Like, there are ways that you can still live life, and you don't want to stop because of your spouse or the person in your life that is necessarily going through their own struggles. So you've got to find a way to live your life. And the letting go and having faith is a big part of releasing those painful parts of your life so that you can start enjoying the good things you have going for you, because you're going to have a great support system. And that's the other part of it. You've got to build a good support system. You need that.
So the serenity prayer goes like this. And I don't know if you, have you ever heard all of it?
Yes, I have, but by memory, I do not have it by memory.
Okay. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And that's exactly what you've talked about all night. It's out of your control. Courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. Then it goes on to say, Father, give us courage to change what must be altered, serenity to accept what cannot be helped, and the insight to know the one from the other. That is such depth that if we would just grab a hold of those simple words and pray those and accept those, it hits all of your three points that you gave me tonight. It hit what wisdom you're given all of the spouses that may be enduring this, or a mom that has a son that's going through this, or a daughter. And it's just great wisdom. There was a chapter that I wanted to hit on, because I know we have a couple more minutes. Chapter 3, happiness and joy. I needed this. It hit a heartstring. What was you thinking when you wrote those words? And that's what I love about it. It takes some people an unbelievable thickness of a book to get a point across. You do it in a sentence or two. And that's what I like about your blog and this book, is it's pretty short and sweet, but the words that you write are right on target. So tell me about the happiness and joy and what you were shooting for when you wrote that.
Oh, thank you for saying that with my writing. So it really was a real journal entry for me in that piece, because you'll see I talk about such random things from coffee to French fries. Yeah. And, you know, So when you think of joy and happiness, those were the things that came to mind. And there's a few other things in the middle of that that I write about. And I had to figure out, okay, eating a French fry, yeah, I'm totally going to be happy. I'm going to really enjoy a good, salty, crispy fry. This is going to be excellent. But it's not going to carry me. It's not going to make me feel like I'm okay through the next difficult moment that comes my way. So I had to sit with each of those things that I'm like, okay, these do bring happiness to me, but that's not going to carry me through my challenging time. I need to go deeper. And the joy that we carry on the inside is always going to be there. So we have to figure out what brings us joy. And I used in that chapter, I used starting at the highest level of, you know, just basic French fry to, well, going deeper, it brought me back to family meals. It reminded me of the time that I spent at the table laughing and sharing stories or celebrating the day. Was my family dinners were never about what went wrong or here's the direction of how tomorrow is going to go. It was a day of sharing and celebration of or sharing about the day in a really, really fun fashion. We always had a good time at dinner. So I, you know, I kind of, as I dug deeper about French fries, I mean, yes, I love French fries, but going deeper to it, I'm like, I really enjoy family dinner. And that sense of joy is what carries me through every difficult moment because family is number one.
That's perfect. That's perfect. And the two chairs. You wrote about the two chairs. And I don't know if you remember that, but the two chairs you're sitting in one and you're talking to it. Yeah. Tell me what your mindset was on that because I love that part too.
So this is a great exercise that I learned in therapy because I am somebody that really is my worst critic. And when I'm going
to, okay, I'm with you.
So I'm going through a moment and I'm saying, Kelly, you should have done better. Kelly, you're potentially going to fail. Kelly, that wasn't your best. And that only brought on more, just more anxiety. So the therapy session was I sat in a chair and I looked at an empty chair. And I pretended that it was Kelly, but my best friend, Kelly. And I had that best friend, Kelly, was having a bad day. And I had to talk to her. And I had to tell her, you know, what would make her feel better? Because my best friend, Kelly, needs to be told, you did your best. You're always giving it your all. You have stepped up to the plate every time you've been asked. There isn't something that you have not fully given your heart to. So just remember that you are genuinely involved in something, and it may not be an outcome you want, but it's something that you tried really hard at doing. And then the flip side was, you know, switching in the role, that best friend talking to now negative Kelly was to build her back up. And that exercise, one, I physically sat in two different chairs and talked to an empty chair. That exercise was so good at turning off the negative self-talk that I can quickly, it still happens, and there are times it can take a little bit longer, but I can quickly say to myself, Kelly, no, you did give your best, or that could be an outcome, but that's only a bad moment for one part of your day out of a 24-hour day. It doesn't dictate your life. It doesn't dictate your week. You could very much have a bad moment, and that's okay because you will still be okay in the end. So that's the self-talk that I've learned.
That's good. And I think everybody that's listening tonight needs to understand that you're going to be okay. That no matter what you're going through, hang in there. Don't give up. Don't be too hard on yourself. And I find myself, I'm really rough on me. And even at work, and you know that, I'll make a mistake on a form that I send you and go, hey, wait, what's it supposed to say? Oh, I'm stupid. I'm getting old. Or I automatically, you know, want to jump off the hill, you know, and go, oh, no, I messed up. And how many times have I told you, it's time for me to retire. I can't handle this anymore. And it seems like if we could just take a step back, take a big breath, and go, okay, and regroup, it would make a difference in the world. One last question, and then, you know, our time's up, although our awesome radio producer is saying we have all the time we want tonight, so we can talk till midnight, but I won't do that to you. I appreciate your time you've given me already. But if people are having the worst time, and you're having a dark time in your world, it's midnight, and you're sitting in a dark room, What does it do? What do you do to get out of that moment of total cloud has just dropped down on you, a black cloud? And what do you do to get out of that moment? How do you cope?
I go to sleep.
I wish I didn't sleep.
So that when I can't, like the self-talk is bad, or you know, the moment is just not able to shift for me, I really look forward to closing my eyes and knowing that tomorrow's a new day, because that's my only way to end a really, really tough day, is just to go to sleep. It may not be peaceful. It may be a rough night of tossing and turning, and I may not fall asleep right away, and I just need to turn on a show. I just have the thinking at that point is time to take a break. Yeah. If you can go to sleep, and just know that tomorrow's new day and you have an opportunity to start the day off. And when you, and for me, this is how it works. I can go to sleep. I may not sleep well, but I do wake up and I have a fresher mind where I can start my day with my gratitude journal and list my three things that I'm looking forward to, or that I'm excited about, or I'm already just thankful for. And starting that day off with that thought keeps back any of the negativity from carrying over.
So you believe in this gratitude attitude in your journal. So you journal in the morning?
I do more nighttime journaling, but if it's been a bad night, I just, before I put my feet on the ground, I just try to think of three things.
There you go. That's great. I have a dear friend of mine that's just now starting to get into journaling, prayer journaling. And I mentioned the gratitude part, because I think it's so important that somewhere in the beginning of that journaling, understand, and that's what I think, that was one of my first points tonight on the positive side, that there's always something to be positive about. Mm-hmm. And that is so important. No matter where you're at, find something that you can say I'm grateful for. I have 10 books, I think 10 or 12 books on the corner of my cabinet over there on mindfulness that I bought at Barnes & Noble one day when I was walking around, and I kept pulling these out because I was writing it in my new book on mindfulness. I thought, what is this stuff? Mm-hmm. How important, now this will be my last question, I promise. How important is mindfulness for you in what you do, in how you blog and how you write and how you live? Mindfulness.
I love mindfulness. For me, it's a way to ground my feet and work through any difficult moment, or not even difficult, just straight anxiety. I have a lot going on today and I just have to figure out. So the breathing technique, I do some breathing techniques listed in the guided journal. Each journal entry, there's a separation with either a quote that can continue, you know, somebody thinking and wanting to journal, or a mindfulness activity. And I do a couple of breathing activities or exercises in there. And that alone is just for me to center myself. So it's huge. It's very, very important.
That's good. Great work. I tell you what, I really encourage everybody, and I'm going to put this back up to the camera again without the flash of the light. In Turbulent Times by Kelly Rooney. Get on Kindle right now on Amazon.com and download this. I promise you it's going to be worth every penny that you pay for this. It's almost free. It's $3, and it's cheaper than a cup of coffee at Starbucks, or it's cheaper than extra large fry at McDonald's, and I don't know if that's your choice of French fry that you like or not. But I promise you, if you enjoy this show, and I am not straying you wrong this way, download this book. And read it, and then pass it on and let other people know to get it themselves. Review the book, because that is so hard when you're a beginning author. Try to get anybody. Everybody promises to read it and review it, and nobody does. It's really important to get those numbers where they need to be, but just support Kelly in her first published edition of a book, and I am just so proud of you, Kelly. And thank you for sharing your life. Thank you for being a friend. And thank you for giving us your time tonight and sharing your story with the world. I really appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you for having me. And it's been a joy watching your journey, and also an inspiration.
I appreciate that. And if I may use, I may steal some of your lines for my next book, because there's a couple that I circled like, whoa, I like that one. So if I'll give you credit for it. I promise you if I do. Thank you for being with us. I always like to end the program tonight, each week, with a quick thought. And this thought is basically this: no matter what you're involved in right now, no matter what's happened to you in the past, no matter what's going to go through in your life tonight, I want to let you know, as long as you are breathing, there's always hope. There's always hope. Hang on to that hope. Don't give up on that hope, and be right there and search for that. And there's a roadmap to hope that is just for you. Thank you for joining us tonight. Have an awesome week in this crazy world that we're experiencing right now. And join us next week right here for another edition, live from my house in Houston, Texas, the most beautiful city in the world, for another edition of Breaking the Silence. God bless. Have a good week.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.